You're listening to Stateside. I'm Cynthia Canty. Mark Lamont Hill believes we're in the middle of a war in America, a war being waged on the vulnerable, the destitute, the struggling. So often, those vulnerable people are Black, immigrant, LGBT, poor, easily overlooked. They are nobody. Mark Lamont Hill is a journalist and political contributor to CNN and a distinguished professor of African American Studies at Morehouse College. His new book is Nobody, Casualties of America's War on the Vulnerable, from Ferguson to Flint and beyond. Mark Lamont Hill, welcome to Stateside.
Thank you for having me. It's a pleasure.
The title of your book certainly strikes a chord here in Michigan. You say Flint and the people of Flint really sum up exactly what it means to be nobody in America today. What does that mean, to be nobody?
To be nobody in America today is to be vulnerable. In a sense, just being human is to be vulnerable. Every day that you're born in this world, you're one step closer to death. So we're all vulnerable. But part of why we have government is to reduce the vulnerability, to reduce the chance that we'll die from misfortune or disease or poor health or other things. And for the vulnerable, in some ways, the government, the protective function of the government has gotten smaller and smaller. And for others, the government actually makes them less safe rather than more safe. And that's a really scary thing. And so, you know, all across America over the last few years, we've put a bigger spotlight on state violence. We've seen a rise in police-involved shootings. We've seen people die at the hands of law enforcement. Many were unarmed. Many were mentally ill. A gross majority were Black and brown. Many were male. Many were trans. Many were women. I mean, there's just a range of people who are all vulnerable. And the other piece of this is that vulnerability isn't just about state violence, and state violence isn't just about police guns and bullets. As you mentioned, Flint is an example of state violence at the worst level without a gun or a bullet involved.
What are the most troubling aspects of Flint's story to you?
For me, first of all, the fact that an economic imperative drove the shift in water supply. You know, we live in a moment where market values drive everything that we do. The public interest has been trumped by the private good. And the consequence of that is that we often make decisions that aren't best for the people, that aren't healthiest for the citizenry. They simply are cheaper and more efficient. Efficiency, which is a market value, has often trumped democracy. So that's the first thing. The second thing is that when we found just extraordinary amounts of lead in the water, when we found out that, you know, that the water was just toxic, there was almost an indifference to this reality. We ignored it. It took nearly a year to respond to this. I mean, that's stunning. It's hard to imagine that if we were in Grosse Pointe, Michigan, as opposed to Flint, Michigan, that this would have been the reality. The EPA standards for water is about 15 parts per billion of lead. Just to get, even if you're not a scientist, just understand the number 15. You shouldn't have, that's how much lead you should have in the water. 15 parts per billion, right? In Flint, there were not 15, but 13,200 parts per billion in one sample. I mean, and at no point was it lower than 300 parts per billion. So you're talking about really an act of civic evil here. It was bizarre. And there were people who were stepping up. There were pediatricians like Mona Hanna Atisha, an Iraqi doctor who stood up and did something about this, who stood up and said something about this. And yet nothing was done. You know, that's the other part of this. You know, it's one thing to have such civic evil occur. It's another thing to ignore it.
To your point, not just ignore it, but say, no, there's no problem. I mean, just the many ways state officials and spokespeople said, hey, it's all good. In fact, Brad Werfel, who's the former spokesman for the Department of Environmental Quality, said to Michigan Radio's Lindsay Smith, our reporter, and here was his quote, let me start here. Anyone who's concerned about lead in the drinking water in Flint can relax. And just weeks later, the state was admitting, oh, yeah, we do have a problem and we have to switch back to Detroit water.
And that's the scary part, right? Because, again, people rely on the state for some level of protection. Again, the role of a government is to make your life more rather than less safe. And the backdrop of this, which is also a problem, is the economic reality attached to this. You know, part of what you see is the rise of the emergency manager, right? Someone who intervenes when the state becomes financially shaky, when it becomes insolvent. And the emergency manager has a different set of governing responsibilities and a different set of accountability standards than a normal politician. So you have an emergency manager who's trying to, again, efficiently respond to a civic crisis, But they're not accountable to a voting base. They're not accountable to the public in the same way that a public official is. And so, again, the private interest, a privatized manager, a privatized approach to water, a privatized approach to governing becomes the reason why we end up where we end up. It is a stunning shift in our nation that has occurred over the last 30 years. You keep hearing lately this rise in neoliberalism, and that's exactly what we're seeing here. We're seeing the liberalization of the market. We're seeing notions of deregulation and austerity and privatization become the way that we approach civic life. And as a result, you see community fractures. You see individualism over the collective good. And you see results like Flint.
I'm speaking with historian Mark Lamont Hill. His book is Nobody, Casualties of America's War on the Vulnerable, From Ferguson to Flint and Beyond. Mark, it's been such an angry couple of years in this nation with the police-related shootings. We just learned of the Chicago police shooting death of another unarmed young black man, 18-year-old Paul O'Neill. We see the Trump campaign and the messages that the candidate delivers and those angry reactions as the supporters leave his rallies. What do you think is going to happen in this nation with so many people expressing such anger and scorn at the nobodies? Where do you think that's going to go after the November election, whether Donald Trump should win or whether he should lose?
One thing that I'm excited about is that we finally can have an honest and transparent conversation about race and racism in America and about economic injustice in America. What the Donald Trump supporters have done for us is they've given us a spotlight and they've shown us that there is still a huge slice of American life that still holds white supremacist values, that still holds nationalist ideals, that is still deeply xenophobic, that still has anti-Muslim sentiments. And when you see all of that stuff, you know, having worked in media for a long time, I get the emails, I see this stuff, but oftentimes most Americans don't identify with it. But when you have somebody like Donald Trump who can kind of galvanize all that energy and then even put a big yellow or red hat that says Make America Great Again on top of those people, we can really see them and out them. In some ways, as scary as it is, it's comforting to know that we can now at least keep a handle on it. I think what we do now is we have to figure out how to respond to that. There is such a deep animus toward the vulnerable in this country right now, and Donald Trump's campaign is evidence of that. He didn't create it. He is the outgrowth of that. He is the monster that Frankenstein creates, as it were. He is the person who sort of becomes the representation of all of this stuff, the embodiment of all of the things that we've been fighting against on the left for a very long time. So if Donald Trump becomes president, or if he does not become president, either way, we have to fight against this moment. We have to fight against this moment of white supremacy. We have to fight against this moment of neoliberal ideology. And it's not just a national issue. It's an international issue. And the other thing that Donald Trump reminds us of when he stands on stage with Hillary Clinton, and they have fairly similar takes on education, they have fairly similar takes on the death penalty, they have fairly similar takes on the occupation of Palestine, we have to say, hey, the Democratic option is certainly better than Donald Trump. However, there is not a significant left-wing movement in America if we are comfortable with the Clinton regime as the model for left-wing politics. We have to drag everybody to the left. So we have work to do regardless of who's president. And the fact that state-sanctioned violence occurs, the fact that cities like Flint or Baltimore or Cleveland or Philadelphia can have lead in the pipes, the fact that we can continue to outsource jobs, the fact that we continue to not keep a grip on this nation when it comes to these fundamental issues is a suggestion that we all need to organize for November, but also beyond November.
Mark Lamont Hill, journalist, political contributor to CNN, a distinguished professor of African American Studies at Morehouse College. His book is Nobody, Casualties of America's War on the Vulnerable, From Ferguson to Flint and Beyond. It was great to talk with you, Mark. Thank you so much for being with us on Stateside.
Pleasure is mine. Thank you so much.